The other thing I want to point out here is a separate line of authority to just keep your eye on, and that's the Bentley versus Button case out of the Texas Supreme Court. There's a few different defamation cases, but this was the first where a judge was accused of corruption, and the court said there's no doubt he suffered mental anguish, but it held that it was such a high award of mental anguish relative to the economic harm for injury to the reputation. It was a 40-to-1 ratio. So this is an example of the Texas Supreme Court that has no jurisdiction to do factual sufficiency review, reviewing an award that just got so excessive in its view that it said there's no evidence of the amount. And that's, you know, there's just a couple of cases we're seeing where that has happened. I think the Anderson versus Durant case, the waste management case. And so keep an eye on these defamation cases to see how that perhaps starts intersecting with other areas.
So here's the venerable, you know, three-decade standard for reviewing the amount of any award, including non-economic damages. Pope versus Moore said it's a sole standard for determining whether damages are excessive is factual sufficiency, which requires courts to examine all the evidence in the record to determine whether sufficient evidence supports the damage award, remitting only if some portion is so factually insufficient or so against the great weight and preponderance of the evidence as to be manifestly unjust. I mean, you can almost recite this by memory after a while. And note the or there. You can have a case where the defendant puts on no evidence whatsoever, no controverting evidence whatsoever about the damages. The plaintiff's testimony stands alone. So there's no great weight to look at, but yet the court can say that the plaintiff's evidence, even standing alone, is factually insufficient. So that's Pope versus Moore. What does manifestly unjust mean? Well, an equally venerable case decided the same year, Poole versus Ford Motor, said that it's manifestly unjust if it shocks the conscience or clearly demonstrates bias. So again, you've got two kind of alternative standards there. Shock the conscience looks at it from the point of view of the court, the trial court, or the justices, and then clearly demonstrates bias looks at it from the standpoint of the jury. Was there something that happened during the trial, looking at the entire record, that created some kind of bias on the part of the jury that resulted in this award? So that's the dual standard there.
Let me just note real quickly, I see this as two totally independent inquiries. Our focus today is on the shocks the conscience standard. That seems to be what's under attack. But there's two different ways you could come at it under this Pope test or Poole test.
And I would suggest that there's actually another tool for reviewing the sufficiency of the evidence supporting the amount, and that is to look at the jury charge. Because after all, we're supposed to measure the sufficiency of the evidence against the charge. So here, for example, you're looking at a typical PJC question for a death, a wrongful death case for the survivor's claim. And just look at the words that are embedded in this, fair and reasonable compensation. So you review to see whether the award is fair and reasonable compensation. Is there evidence that it resulted from the death of the plaintiff? You've got definitions of loss of companionship in society against which to measure the evidence. Going on to the next page, you've got definition for mental anguish against which you can measure the sufficiency. And then you've got these factors the jury is told to consider, including, you know, the relationship, the living arrangement, the harmony of the family, and so forth. And the argument is that the more intense, the stronger the relationship, the more intense it was, the higher amount that could be justified. If the family members never lived together, for example, or if they were separated, then you could see a lower amount being required. So I think this is another tool for reviewing the sufficiency of the evidence of the amount. Okay, so once the existence of non-economic damages, once you get past this hurdle of showing you have legally sufficient evidence of the fact of damage, the common wisdom was, well, now we're kind of home free. Whatever the jury ascribed to the amount is generally going to be sufficient, going to be supported. And, you know, there's some support for that. In Anderson versus Durant, the court commented that non-economic damages are not amenable to calculation with precise mathematical precision. That's absolutely true. And you can find a legion of cases, Court of Appeals cases, saying that we are not to substitute judgment, our judgment, for that of a jury as to the amount of damages to be awarded for personal injuries because it's so discretionary with the jury. And yet, on the other hand, you see other statements and cases that suggest that, well, we are going to look more carefully at the amount of an award. In Anderson versus Durant, the court said juries don't have carte blanche in deciding the matter. There must be evidence to support the amount awarded, and the award must be an amount that a reasonable person could possibly estimate as fair compensation, kind of maybe going back to the wording of the jury charge, is it fair and reasonable compensation? And then you've got cases saying juries cannot simply pick a number and put it in the blank. I'm sure you've heard that language quoted before. There's a case you might want to look at out of, I believe, Beaumont called Lane versus Martinez, where it appeared literally the jury did pick a number and put it in the blank. There was a plaintiff in that case who turned out lacked the standing to even claim damages, but she was arguing for $2 million. Well, the jury took that $2 million, awarded it to the parents of the decedent who did have standing, and then took that $2 million, divided it amongst the eight blanks that they had, for past and future mental anguish and lost companionship, and just divided it up and put it in the blank. And for that reason, among others, the court held that it appeared that the jury just had picked a number and put it in the blank, and that wasn't sufficient.